so many things in the community. If you could share a little, each of you, about your background, what kind of work, paid and unpaid, you've engaged in, and how that's led to the work you do today. We can begin with either one of you.
Okay. How this, my background is, I grew up in inner city LA in a very diverse community with a family that really supported diversity and heavily involved in the YMCA down in Los Angeles. And that led to my joining the Peace Corps as soon as I got out of Cal Poly. And that put me into Asia and the Philippines. Soon after, I and my new husband were in West Africa, Liberia. So we knew we did not want to return to inner city living after a rural experience that we really enjoyed in Africa. So we ended up in French Gulch. And around that time, I met people that were involved in civil rights here in the Shasta County area. So that's kind of my journey to SCAR. Mm.
Thank you.
And my journey, I always refer to myself as an old hippie. So I grew up overseas. I came back to the United States as a U.S. citizen, I might add, back to the United States when I went to college. And I went to several different colleges. I was in LA, I was at Berkeley, I was at Davis. And it was an eye-opening experience for me to come to this country and see the different culture and the attitude of Americans towards different cultures. And I think that was the beginning of it for me. You know, work-wise, I worked 30 years with people with developmental disabilities, and you talk about a culture that's undervalued, that would be the word, you know, and I've worked with the 0 to 5 group a lot, and now I work with teens. So all of those are cultures in our society that are undervalued, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's really striking me the power of being immersed in a culture different than your own and coming back with a larger perspective, things right. that you didn't perhaps notice.
Exactly.
Initially. And you're both here today because you're longtime members of SCAR, or Shasta County Citizens Advocating Respect. So I was wondering if you could tell our listeners, to begin with, a little bit about the early days of SCAR.
And being a long short timer of 10 years, I'm turning this over to Penny, who has been here she's been a member since 1993. That gives her a lot of background.
A lot of street cred.
Right. But SCAR really actually started when Jesse Jackson was running for president way back in 1988. And a local group of mostly black Redding citizens were having a political picnic rally in Lake Redding Park. A woman left the rally and had some kind of car difficulty. A black man from the group went over to help her, and as they were working on her car, a pickup truck drove by right on North Market Street, right by the park, in broad daylight and fired a shot towards them. They happened to be a mixed racial couple. I didn't know this until just yesterday, checking on the history, but the two men that were in that truck did end up in court and did spend some time in jail. But that was the catalyst for David Ledger, who's a local longtime activist, to just say to people publicly, let's meet and find out and discuss what we can do. So SCAR was an outgrowth of that incident, that racist event, and the early days were finding their way. They were rather tumultuous, not real good relations in the community. But Fran Brady gave the group some real stability for many, many years as our president. And a major shift historically was the horrible murders of Gary Mattson and Winfield Mauder out in Happy Valley. And that galvanized the community to broaden, especially SCAR folks, to broaden our perspective from racial issues to all minorities of folks in our area. And that was when we changed our name from Shasta County Citizens Against Racism to Shasta County Citizens Advocating Respect. So now we'll talk more about more of our projects, but we have evolved to become much more concerned about all of our citizens and their rights and their respectful conversations between our different groups in town.
And I think that we're really trying to look at things in to take a positive approach rather than a negative approach, rather than the don't do that or whatever, to really say, this is what we could be, this is what we could do. Would you agree, Penny?
I think
that's, yep, that's part of the whole change in our focus.
And that word in our group name, that one word, respect, really is the heart of what we're about.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, when you said you moved from a focus on racial discrimination and issues to broader underrepresentation.
Much broader representation.
Right. So right. LGBTQ. BTQ,
right. Native American community.
Ageism, mm-hmm. Yeah. Disability.
Right.
So how do you describe, and perhaps you brought it with you, your SCAR's mission and vision today?
So our mission, right from the action plan, mm-hmm. Shasta County Citizens Advocating Respect is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the promotion of civil rights and social justice through education, cultural interactions, and public and private advocacy. And, you know, annually, I mean, to meet this mission, annually we write an action plan. What are we going to do this year? So that we don't just drift through the year sort of being reactive. We really want to be proactive. We feel that goes with our name, Advocating Respect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think we have several wonderful groups in town, and one of the things that SCAR right now is doing is forming stronger alliances, like with the Sikh community, the Life Center up at
Shasta Beloved Community.
The Shasta Beloved Community.
SEJC.
Right, right. And Interfaith Forum.
The Interfaith Forum, right.
So forming those alliances is critical to our work, but I'd like to point out that SCAR is unique, I believe, in our area, in our strong, long-standing relationship with law enforcement, which has really helped our advocacy efforts for local people.
So, you know, I guess one of the things that goes with the mission is who is on our board, you know, and we try really hard to have wide representation on our board of different cultures, all different cultures. So that's one piece of it. But another piece of it is to look at how we can support other organizations. So
right.
One of the things, and this actually drifts into what we do, one of the things that we have found that we are able to do is act as the fiscal agent for small nonprofit groups. And that's a really valuable and very connecting way for us to work with small groups and to be involved in all the different things that happen in the community. So when they do the Cesar Chavez giveaway, the money, we coordinate the money for people and for them, for the people who donate, etc. And then we, of course, participate. And so it really connects us. Mm-hmm. We're really happy with that community engagement connection mm-hmm. bit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we'll have some more questions about that later, because I think that type of partnering is so important now across in the people who come on this show, too, mm-hmm. the ways that we can support each other. But I had a question about the law enforcement first. And I was wondering if you could say a little bit more about your reasons for wanting law enforcement on the board, how you see that relationship developing, and why it's important to your mission.
We've actually had, through the years, almost a steady stream of board representatives from the Reading Police Department. And sometimes it is real-time connections that help people. We were actually in a board meeting at the Shasta County Schools office on Magnolia Avenue mm-hmm. When a Native American man who was having serious difficulties with law enforcement and health issues was actually shot by the police doing something illegal. And that was on South Market Street, 273, actually, down by the Mission. The door opened, and two Native women, relatives of the deceased person, came in and asked for our help because, in their cultural view, the body was being mistreated by not being covered, by not being moved. And we happened to have a representative from the police department sitting right there, who immediately called the chief. They met with those two women the very next morning, and policy changes were made within the police department. So a lot of these connections are outside the public's view. There are just time and time again, incidences where we've been able to just connect with the chief or the sheriff, and that has made changes.
So what happens there is that the chief actually selects a member of his staff, and it's usually in his admin staff, and says, you will attend the meetings. And the fellow that we have right now has been with us for about 3 years.
Right.
We'll use his first name only, but Mark.
Yeah.
And Mark has just been outstanding. You know, he can tell us how the police department actually works, you know, and give us that insight, so we understand the story that's coming a little bit better. You know, he can do some follow-up sometimes with us, and certainly it has been a remarkable and long relationship. Tom O'Mara is our liaison to the RPD, so mm-hmm. that we do it both ways. Tom is our liaison to the RPD, and then Mark is our liaison from the RPD to SCAR.
Mm. So it sounds like there's that insight, understanding the context, serving as a liaison, having those direct connections to be able to go to
right
when people come to you.
I don't know if the listeners remember a while back the cross-burning incident in Anderson. SCAR was immediately notified of that, and we helped organize the march. And Chief Purcell then was honored at our annual awards banquet. So we have added a law enforcement award, so we publicly acknowledge law enforcement officers that go above and beyond in fulfilling our mission in the community.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you started to talk a little bit earlier about some of the things that you're doing. So I wanted to make sure we reviewed your kind of your strategy, your services and activities currently. What are the main things that these days you find yourself doing? I know there have been forums and other ways of interacting.
Right. We think education is probably one of the biggest pieces. Mm. You know, so we mentioned maintaining partnerships, evolving partnerships, keeping partnerships alive and effective. That's really a big one for us. But then we also have several activities that we do. For example, one of the ones that will be familiar potentially to some of your listeners is we recently had a workshop on difficult conversations led by Kern Berry. And, you know, I have to say that for us, making our way through difficult conversations is just a vital thing that we think everybody has to learn to do. You know, you look at today, you look at the way the city council's members talk to each other, the way that the board of supervisors, the supervisors talk to each other. You know, there's this stream of bullying sort of conversation that goes through our society. So we did have one workshop. There have been previous workshops. We're hoping that, and we've talked with Kern about this, that we can hold this workshop even annually here, you know, and try and get some of our unusual suspects to come to that conversation. Mm-hmm. And if we have time a little later, you know, I'd like to give you a 2-minute sort of thing on how that works.
Why don't we do that right now since we're talking and thinking about it? And I think, you know, for me, as thinking as a listener, getting a sense of, you know, what's the main takeaway for someone who attends that workshop? What should they be able to do or recognize when they come out?
I think it's more a matter of recognition, because I think it takes practice,
yes,
to learn to have a difficult conversation. Mm-hmm. So the kinds of, I mean, really what we're focusing on here is people need to prioritize the relationship with the person that they're having the difficult conversation with over being right. Okay, so we don't want them to focus on being right, but what is the relationship? You know, being willing to let go of the argument, giving the conversation a break. Sometimes that's all you need. Mm-hmm. Looping back for understanding. I think I heard you say that kind of thing. Understanding the other person's story. So difficult conversations is really based on telling your story and hearing the story of the other person, you know.
Listening,
yes. And then looking for opportunities for resolution. And when you talk about that, you can know each other's story and still not be able to work your way through this difficult conversation. So there are a lot of ideas, you know. What is your personal story, and recognizing your own unconscious bias, and recognizing who you are and how you think. And most of us, whatever our self story is, it's not the whole story. We come to it with our own bias and so on. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we want people to do is be able to step back and really think about it. I mean, personally, I use meditation. Something comes up to me, and I go home, I think about it. I focus, and I go, whoa, Susan, what were you thinking? You know? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, over time, I have evolved the saying, what's the rest of the story? You know, when I'm talking to somebody, why do you think the way you are? Because you need to hear their story, recognize that their story also has unconscious bias in it, and working your way through. So it's hard to change even recognizing each other's stories into coming to some kind of resolution. And I think that that's the really hard part, It's hard for all of us. It takes practice, you know.
And it sounds like what you're saying, too, that sometimes it's the discussion and the relationship that's more important than any kind of resolution.
Absolutely. That's the number one thing, you know, prioritize the relationship over being right. Mm-hmm. Because if we can't talk to each other, we will never, ever get there, you know. And it's kind of interesting. One of the other projects that we have going right now is we have we work with Carl Bott, and we're on his show every third Wednesday at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we talk about some of these issues, you know, and trying to explore. I mean, using sort of the concepts of difficult conversations,
right.
You know, try to explore. What do we think, and why do we think it, and how do we think it, and what do we do about it, as compared to who are you, you know, what do you think, and so on. And so it's been an interesting evolution, you know. We bring different people on his show, and I think all of us learn something about each other on the on the show, you know. You talk for an hour. So that's another piece that we've really worked on. And it kind of goes with the whole difficult conversations is getting to be an underlying concept for us.
Right. I think one of Scar's shining moments, some of them have been where we have provided a platform for the conversations to occur, for people to interact and maybe even rub shoulders and change a little. And one of those, right after the murder of George Floyd, was a community press conference. And we were able to bring together people from the media, both print, TV,
radio,
school representatives, faith community. Our elected officials were able to show up, and we basically just asked them, what will you do in your position to make our community safe? And there were some wonderful conversations recorded that day. So Scar has done that, those public forums and events where people can listen and learn. We had another one a few years back where our panelists were all currently homeless or recently homeless. And many, many people from our community that we had never met were very interested in that discussion and showed up and asked their questions.
And then we also did the homeless dinner at the Methodist Church.
Right.
And we invited all of the local public policy makers, I'll call them, and we sat and ate with people who had labeled themselves as unhoused and homeless. And we partnered there with the Sikh Center to provide the food, and it was an eye opening and a beginning for this county to really look at homelessness, you know. So it was a remarkable event.
Yeah. So Scar has this public educational component where we try to nurture difficult conversations. Around, you know, local topics in need and respect. We also support like-minded groups, events, and
we give away money.
Yep. Yep. But we also have an out of the public eye, private advocacy component that I feel is just as important and just as needed. And through the years, being a former school teacher, we have had local parents, grandparents often, come to us because their child, their grandchild is having some kind of bullying, prejudicial treatment in the school setting, and they are at a total loss how to handle it, or they've tried to handle it and have felt rebuffed or stymied or
not capable of addressing a system they don't know.
Right,
sometimes.
Right. Often it's just unfamiliarity with school procedures. You know, what is the school's safety plan? What are the policies around safety, and you know, how do they address bullying when it occurs on their campus? And often what we do is meet with the parents and then offer to go with them to a student study team meeting or a parent conference. Because, you know, there are just lots of folks in our community that are uncomfortable with school situations. And I Scar also in the past has had, and we're, I'm sure, willing to do that now at any time, offer speakers to classrooms. I've had teachers ask me to bring in Isaac Lowe when she was with us in our community, and she was wonderful with different age groups, answering their questions about what it's like growing up, you know, as a Black person here in Shasta County. What brought her here, and how has she been treated, and how did she deal with it? Mm-hmm. And we do have this private advocacy component where it can be beyond the schools. It can be, in the past we've had incidents where a mixed racial couple was not seated at a restaurant, and they sat there where they had reservations, and several other people were seated and they were ignored for quite a while, and they came to us and had a concern. Mm-hmm. We privately sent a letter to the business and offered, sensitivity or awareness training for that person's staff. Apologies were made and changes were made mm-hmm. at that business. So,
I mean, one example that really is remarkable to me is, and this happened at UPrep, there was a basketball mm-hmm. game, and there was name calling. Mm-hmm. And Shelley Peterson, the principal, called us up, and she said, I actually need some help here. You know, I need to know how to do this. And we spent quite a bit of time with that. You know, one of our board members took it on as a real project and ended up on their board at UPrep, mm-hmm. their school board at UPrep, and is still there, I think. The solutions aren't always easy. It's not as easy mm-hmm. as writing a letter, you know.
Right.
I mean, they say it takes 7 years to change a culture, you know, and so I'm really proud of our person who is sitting on their school board, keeping an eye out, going to basketball mm-hmm. games, and looking at bullying within mm-hmm. within the school period. You know,
so it sounds like that personal advocacy and support, that sort of a liaison mm-hmm. and looking mm-hmm. for solutions mm-hmm. with those groups. So you've mentioned several ways where the focus has changed to, you know, kind of broadening areas of concern and widening education, this more private advocacy. Have there been any other ways that the focus has changed that would be important to share?
Sure. We have several projects going right now. One of them is what we call the 5 D's. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's about what do you do when you see something happen? And you're sitting there going, oh, I just saw something happen that it was not acceptable. How do I respond? You know, And we have taken that on the road, and we have cards and posters, and we distributed the information through the Shasta County Office of Education. Yeah. You know, we've presented at Rotaries. We've been on the radio about it. Just talking about each of us has a responsibility to interact when something when they see something negative. And along with that responsibility, they need to take care of themselves. So getting people to think about what they could do. And actually, this came from Linda Bott, who found herself in an awkward situation. And she said, I simply didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what my choices were. Getting people to think ahead, you know. I mean, you can upset a thing that's going on, a negative thing, by just simply throwing your coffee cup and going, oh my God, I dropped my coffee.
Yeah,
you
distract.
Know, and people are distracted. We talk about all kinds of different ways that you can do that. And we talk about it in terms of adults who have one set of cultural ways that are appropriate. And for kids, you know, when you're a kid at school,
right.
What are your choices, and mm-hmm. how do you do it? So that's been a really peachy thing that we have.
Yeah, that comes from a group in, I'm not even sure where they're located. We connected with them online. It's iHollaback.
They changed their name recently. I don't remember
new
name.
But they gave us permission to use their materials,
nice.
And it's way beyond that old adage, when you see something, say something. I mean, sometimes saying something at that moment is not the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes after the incident has occurred, the hatred or the bullying, you go up privately and support the victim or those people that were hurt by it in some ways. So this 5D program is proactive,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and it gives you a lot more options than just say something.
Yeah, well, and we'll definitely link to that as well as the new name for the organization
yeah.
so people
right.
can understand that a bit more in context.
Right, right.
And we also have a multicultural dinner, you know, where it's a potluck, and people bring the food of their culture, and the recipes, we tell stories, we always have a lot of youth there, so we have little contests like, where do tomatoes come from, you know, we tend to think that the whole world is our world, and you know, trying, especially in a place like Shasta County, it's difficult, mm-hmm. you know.
We also have a strong, long-standing interaction with the Native American community. In fact,
different communities in the
right,
in the region,
right.
in the county. Mm-hmm.
And back when we had many Mien and Hmong folks moving into Redding, into Shasta County, many of the adults hadn't had the opportunity yet to really learn English. The police department was stopping teenage Asian youth and taking them to the station and photographing them for their mug book, which ups the chance of a incorrect, pointing out of the perpetrator of something that had happened. And one of our members noticed a traffic stop and that this was happening. Mm. And the parents were not being notified or did not understand because of the language barrier. Mm. And Scar stepped in, spoke to the police chief and explained the ramifications of that policy, and we got some changes made there. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Which
I'm going to follow up on that in just a second. But if you're just joining us, you are listening to Bending the Arc on KKRN Community Radio out of Round Mountain. And Susan, I'm going to get to your point, but it brings up again, you mentioned the private advocacy effort that you have, and certainly you have a lot of different connections, and you spoke about law enforcement being on your board. How else do people know to come to you for those private advocacy efforts. You have quite a few teachers on your board, I know, and other connections, but how is it that someone is referred to you?
Oftentimes it's through a board member. Mm. And that's why we try very hard to have different board members that are connected to these different cultures in our area. Mm-hmm. And they hear about something and they bring it to us. We are on Facebook, and occasionally someone, even from the jail, mm-hmm. will reach out to us and send emails or good old-fashioned letters and alert us to some need that's going on.
And at one point, we actually had a form that we had posted, but that was not an effective. It turns out that's not an effective way to do it. These things are personally important to people, and they want to talk to a person, not mm-hmm. fill out a form and have us call them. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting learning experience for us about, and it's something that we struggle with a little bit. How do we connect with people? How do people know that we're here and so on? So that's one reason that we're always happy to talk about ourselves a little bit, because we're really a small, quiet group. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest.
And we're all volunteers. This
right.
Is, yeah.
But the thing I was going to say that followed up on this conversation with Penny was that our interaction with the police department is one of the reasons that we've taken on as a major priority building a citizens advisory board with the Reading Police Department. This has been, for us, about a 3 or 4 year effort. Mm-hmm. You know, we have been through, this is our third police chief that mm-hmm. we have been working with it on. And so it has been an interesting trip. You know, I believe that Bill Shuler is very interested. We wrote his policies and procedures for doing it. You know, we identified people to be on the Citizens Advisory Board. We developed a list of things that he wanted them to do. COVID came, you know, and then as we know, law enforcement has a variety of things they need to attend to. And so this is kind of, I think, been on the back burner for a while, but it's something that we're really working on again this year to push this into reality. So, you know, you talked about projects, and I just want to make sure that one got in there.
Mm. Yeah, and that's one I know when you come, you know, as being part of SEJC that we've talked about, and there's a lot of interest in, you know, and it relates to, you know, it has sounded like what that board would do and its purview is emerging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And part of what's emerging is also, for those of us interested in such a group, makes me think about all of our different groups and what we see as some of the most pressing or important issues related to fair and equal justice currently in the county. And so I was wondering for you all, and your involvement in SCAR is one, but you're both involved in a number of different community organizations, you know, from those vantage points, what do you see as some of the most pressing fair and equal justice issues facing the county today?
Well, I think Susan's already touched on being able to communicate more compassionately with each other, that is a tool we need to move forward and solve problems. The level of division and discourse right now is a real concern, I think, not only here, but nationally, of course. Disengagement, people pulling away. I think we've got a county with a long-standing laundry list of ills and issues. We have just high levels of poverty that can be the basis for a lot of our problems and a lot of our interactions. And and the stress levels for all of us are pretty high right now. So all of those issues, there are educational concerns, abuse,
you know,
and self-medication, Susan.
Yeah, and for Susan, I'm going to have, see if you can focus on the criminal legal system in particular, because you have lots of interaction and knowledge there, League of Women Voters.
Yeah, that's where that's where I was going to go. Great. You know, with the League of Women Voters, one of the goals of the League of Women Voters this past year has been to work with the sheriff on an the Board of Supervisors, actually, and the sheriff about a possible advisory board as well. Oversight is used loosely here. I don't, you know, we would not be running the sheriff's department. But, you know, someone like the sheriff is really a powerful person. And that person is elected, not appointed. That person acts independently. So in we've probably had at the League Michael Johnson talk two or three times with us about what he was planning to do when he was appointed. And actually today I've had three or four interactions with him because the League does forums. So we know a lot about what people think and who are running for election. We don't pick candidates. But we really think that the issues that they bring up are important. And so Michael Johnson was one of those folks. And as most people know, we had an issue with the Pledge of Allegiance during our forums. And again, this was to me a time when this was a difficult conversation. You know, how do we work our way through that that whole thing? And so Michael Johnson sent a letter to me today saying that he apologizes for his choice of behavior during that event. And I thought,
in advocating for saying the Pledge of Allegiance when that wasn't part of the
forum. When it wasn't part of the forum. And I sent that letter out to everyone in the League. I thought that was an example, because he and I talked after that. And I said, you know, I asked you if you wanted to say the Pledge of Allegiance. I was going to set it up so that you could say it in a way that, that went with our system, our methodology, our procedure. And he said no, he wasn't going to say it, and then he said it. And so we had a chance to talk afterwards and talk about, you know, and work it through. So to me, that is the kind of work that we need to know. What's your story, Mike Johnson? What's your story, League of Women Voters? You know, and how do we work together to make something actually work and make it civil, and make it so that people hear what's being said instead of jumping on things, you know? Well, I mean, that was a real example. This set of forums was a real example of...
They were very interesting, weren't
yes.
they? But it also, you're also pointing to that more of a systems issue of back to education, of what does the sheriff do? What is their purview? What does it mean to be a constitutional sheriff?
Yes.
What is the
coroner's office
oversight? What's legally allowed? What do they decide in the coroner's office? Yeah. Yeah. And we hopefully we'll have him on. I know he's been very open to having conversations in the past. So that would be great to get some of his perspectives on that.
And it's so encouraging when you see or can help facilitate those conversations, you know, and see them happening.
And, you know, to circle back for a second, you know, there are many ways that you support other agencies through, you know, amplifying voices, holding conversations, fiscal sponsorship, those sort of things. So to flip the switch, how does your partnership with communities and organizations, how has that shaped you and benefited SCAR in doing their work?
I think it benefited us a lot.
Yes.
I have to say that we really moved from a one focus organization, mm-hmm. racism, which is what started us, to a much broader look at our community and the strengths of our community and the mm-hmm. ways that we can help our community to grow. Because I'm not going to be a person that's, and it moved us in the positive. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be a person that says, this is what's wrong with my community. I'm going to be a person that says, how do I help this community grow? Mm-hmm. You know, grow in a way that yeah. benefits the culture of this community, mm-hmm. whatever that is. So I think that really it has, we have really grown over time. I was looking quickly just at the list of people that we work directly with, not in our town, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. The Shasta Beloved Community, Shasta Interfaith, the Sikh Center, at the Cultural and Educational Center there, Local Indians for Education. We have a scholarship fund mm-hmm. for kids in that organization. We have a scholarship fund period that we haven't even touched on.
Yes.
Where mm-hmm. we work closely with Shasta College to identify people, I don't want to say youth because they're not youth, but people who are at the college who have overcome
right
challenges, or, you know, right. major challenges, and who need money to continue their education.
And we're also our original scholarship is in honor of Isaac Lowe. So it's out at Shasta College, and it's the Isaac Lowe Civil Rights and Social Justice Scholarship. And we're looking for students in any area that are interested in civil rights and interested in making a difference. And that's been going on for 14 years and over 24 different recipients. A newer fund that we have set up honors Rod Lindsay, mm-hmm. and we partner with the Local Indians for Education group in funding some support of their programs and their youth. So those are two examples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rod is sorely missed.
He is.
Yes.
One of the remarkable things about the youth at Shasta College that we give the scholarships to is that we expect them then to come and be part of our organization for the time that they're at Shasta College. You know, mm-hmm. I think there's we hope that in addition to giving them money, we act as mentors. Mm-hmm. And advisors and supporters and that kind of thing, you know, so that we're building strengths or giving them ideas maybe they haven't had before, you know, mm-hmm. supporting them in where they want to go, social bridging, for mm-hmm. lack right. of a better word.
Mm-hmm. And some of those recipients have gone on to higher education and come back and are currently working in areas like social services, mm. counseling, and all kinds of, you know, some real success stories.
Mm-hmm. Nice. You know, and so you've talked about this mentoring and relationship building and the ways that you connect, and you both mentioned ways that you address people who feel like, I think you used the word disengaged, Penny, or don't feel that things can change or have lost hope in the system, mm-hmm. or have really experienced a lot of difficult things in our multiple systems. How do you reach out to and support people who want a different future, but don't know where to plug in or feel that they can see how their efforts can make a difference?
Well, I think it's by being visible, by showing up, and through these different organizations that we help support, that we come across people. My husband Daryl and I recently attended the African American graduation at Sequoia School, and I think I only knew maybe a handful of folks that I had met before. And it was so heartening to see that something where you honor and respect and set up some kind of way of recognizing personal growth. It makes such a difference.
And that's graduation from preschool through
a master's degree. Someone was getting a master's degree.
Right. Yeah. And it was just an amazing, uplifting, positive evening of interactions. So, you know, hopefully that's how SCAR can, you know, continue to make those contacts. And
I mean, we really work to identify things that are happening in the community and become visible in that. And by visible, I don't mean that we have our little logo on the program, written program. You know, recently when the new NorCal Outreach opened, I think that literally everybody on the board managed to walk their way through, introduce themselves, talk with people, and so on. And I think that kind of thing is really important. As far as the students, I mean, we really try to bring them into the nest, you know, and see what they need. You know, my thing is always don't do it to people, do it with people, you know. And I get that from working with kids. You know, we design all these programs, the kids don't come, and you think, what happened there? Well, we didn't ask them. Maybe we should have asked them.
Sounds like an interview I did earlier today where people are like, yeah, you should really involve people.
Yeah. So I think that that's one of the things that we work with. You know, we go to other people's board meetings and say, this is what we do. How can we help you? That's how we, I think we've built our partnerships that way. And I mean, fiscal management assistance was not something that we ever planned to do. It just turned out to be something that people needed. They only have a small amount of money, most of them. You know, they can't do a bookkeeper. Some of them are not even interested in doing books. And so we have to ask the community, what do you need from us? And then we have to respond to that ask, you know, and figure out what is it that we really truly can do, a group of volunteers, you know.
Well, and it sounds like from what you were saying earlier, part of your responsiveness is, well, we don't do that, but let's connect you with someone who does. Is that right?
Correct.
Correct. Yeah, as a member of other nonprofit boards, that fiscal sponsorship is important.
Yes, it is.
It's important to have.
Yes, it is.
So you're both visionaries in many ways. What is your vision for the social justice landscape in Shasta County in the next 5 to 10 years? What do you think is possible, and what would you like to see SCAR's role in that be?
I can take a quick stab at it, and those of you who have been listening probably know what I already would say. We need to learn to talk to each other, and we need to learn why we think what we think, each one of us, and how to connect. To me, I would love to see that kind of thing happen. The civility of learning other people's stories and uniting on issues that are important in our community.
You know, you remind me too of the critical role when I went through the difficult conversations, making sure that we are aware of and tuned into our own stories.
Exactly.
That self-awareness and knowing our own emotions that.
And not just knowing our own emotions, etc., on the surface, but digging deep. Yes. Digging deep. Who am I really? I think Kern Berry calls it the unself story when you go the extra mile.
A little bit more specifically, being a teacher, I hope to see our schools develop curriculum that is more in depth around our local history, our personal stories, but also being inclusive about all the folks who have come here at different times for different reasons, what their stories are, and that we get a little deeper in our understanding of our history as a nation, but specifically right here in Shasta County.
Well, that is a great subject for another podcast as well. I thank you so much for bringing that up, and thanks to both of you, both for coming here, but for the work that you do in SCAR and elsewhere. We'll definitely link to some of the things that you've said. And if you're listening, I've been talking to Penny Harris and Susan Wilson of SCAR, Shasta County Citizens Advocating for Respect, and you've been listening to Bending the Arc on community-supported KKRN 88.5. We're supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Feel free to support us, become more involved in what we do by going to kkrn.org, clicking on the donate button, going old school, mailing us a check, P.O. Box.